Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
And here we are back again for another segment of Love, Lust, and Laughter. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, and I think that my funny sidekick may be on board any minute. But once again, we have Dr. Jack Morin, who was our guest on May 13th, so 2 weeks ago. Welcome again, Dr. Jack.
Oh, well, thanks, Diana. It's great to be back.
You're such a great guest, and of course, you've written some very important books. And I really encourage people to go to your website, jackmorin.com.
As a matter
and
of fact,
there
I
is
right
Billy Sage.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Hello, Billy.
Sometimes I wonder if there might be problems with telephone incontinence. There I was thinking I was on, and suddenly I kept hearing boop, boop, boop. When you try to connect from all over, people like Jack can help people like us connect, and that's why our lovely host, Diana Wiley, was there while I was going, oh, hello, hello. I could hear boops and beeps, but sometimes.
Well, I'm glad you're on board, Billy Sage.
So I'm here. I'm tall in the saddle and short on the telephone, but something will work.
Okay, good.
And by the way, our number, if you'd like to chime in, those studio audience, is 1-888-874-4888.
Yes, and on May 13th, of course, you can go back now and listen to the archived show, our first show with Dr. Jack Morin, and so you can go back to May 13th and hear that. We spoke about his first book, The Erotic Mind, which is a guide to deep exploration of your most important turn-ons and how they work and what they mean and how they can work against you and what you can do about it if they do. And so we spoke pretty much in the last show about part one in his book, where you could learn how to use peak experiences and fantasies as tools for self-discovery. You know, our sexuality really is at our core. And now part two of this program too, you can apply your discoveries to recognition and understanding of a variety of very common erotic problems. And I thought we can talk about when turn-ons turn against you from your book, Erotic Mind, but also how Eros heals. And, of course, we know that sexuality and Eros can be really healing, especially for people whose self-image has been poisoned by shame-based teachings about sexuality. Jack, could you begin by sharing with the audience the difference, it may be just semantical or maybe not, between sex and Eros?
Yeah, I think it's an important difference, although I don't care about the words per se, but more the meaning. When mm-hmm. we talk about sex, we're talking about male and female. We're talking about certain specific activities that people engage in called having sex type of thing like that.
Right.
But when we move into erotic, and we're also talking about our ability to have arousal, sexual mm-hmm. arousal and orgasm. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that are part of who we are. That's part of our nature. Eroticism comes into play where our abilities for arousal and orgasm basically interact with all the other dimensions, challenges, possibilities, hopes, and dreams in our lives. And so eroticism is what gives our sexuality its unique personal shape and texture and meaning to us. So a lot of it is about our own deep personal experience and the stories that we come to tell and the wishes that we have as a result of what we've been through in our own sexual development.
Well expressed. And so If you go to Jack's website, Hear Me Speak, you can actually listen to a Quad S, that's Society for the Scientific Study of Sexuality, Western Region, a presentation that you did in 2008.
Yeah.
And your slide presentation was wonderful, and as well as your how you presented. And I wish we had Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing music as an overlay. Billy, do you remember the song Sexual Healing at all?
I remember that song. I remember that feeling. But we're on the up, Diane and Jack, with little sexual healing.
Close enough.
Copyright refused when I attempt to do it. I don't think any lawyers will be coming over here and saying, you were so good, I'm sure. Well, anyway.
Well, it's basically Marvin Gaye saying, hey, baby, I woke up this morning and I'm feeling sick and my temperature is rising and I need you to come over and give me some sexual healing. That's the basic idea.
That's the basic idea. And you said something kind of amusing in that presentation, that not only did Marvin Gaye need some sexual healing, but maybe it had something to do with his last name. Repeat that. I...
So that's Marvin Happy.
I said, so what's troubling Marvin besides the fact that he's gay? And then I put up, you know, him. His name is spelled G-A-Y-E.
Right.
And I always had wanted to use his last name in some kind of a pun or a gag. And I finally got my closest chance that I think I'll probably get.
But it was a marvelous presentation. I think it was a plenary presentation as well, which made it extra important. So the benefits of positive sexuality, and of course you talk first about pleasure, and when people can have deep pleasure, it brings extraordinary richness to their relationship. And I think,
and to their private sexuality as well, when we have pleasure on our own.
Yes, with masturbation.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. But with partner sex, the more I like to think, and this is sort of a tantra idea, but the more pleasure, the more the healing.
Yes, I mean, pleasure is a lot more complex and multi-layered than we sometimes think it is. You know, sometimes we associate pleasure with, oh, it's just fun and games, you know, kind of thing. And it can be definitely just like that. But there are experiences of pleasure that we have that touch us so deeply that they move us to the core, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the peak experiences we were talking about just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
That are very memorable and leave a lasting effect. But even if they're not, you know, our huge, most favorite peak experiences, when we experience deep pleasure, it's profoundly relaxing. It's profoundly self-affirming. It gets us more deeply in touch with who we are at that moment, because usually when we're really caught up in a very good, affirming pleasure experience, we're not thinking about other things. We're not fretting about this or obsessing about that. We are present.
Did I remember to shut the Yotan off?
I don't care! Yeah, who cares? We'll deal with that later.
Yeah, to be mindful, to be in the moment.
To be mindful and in the moment. And
is
so
essential.
These are very special experiences. And of course.
Honey, I know you're in the moment, but we're making love on top of the oven. You just turned it on. It's getting really hot.
Well, that might be a bit more of an emergency. We might have to attend to that.
But it really is a marvelous chance for self-exploration in that you can even figure out, if it's such a hot experience, to be extra in the moment and to surrender and to let go. So in that way, it's also very healing.
Well, I think it can go even deeper than we're talking about, which you know, sounds wonderful and is wonderful, the things that we're already describing. But some things that happen when we have deeply pleasurable erotic experiences is that we get the experience that, in many cases, that something that has been troubling or difficult for us in our lives, something that we've struggled with or had pain about, has been at least temporarily healed and transformed into something very affirming and very deeply pleasurable and validating. For example, if we carry around, as so many of us do, doubts about our desirability, about our worth, about our lovability, about our attractiveness, about whether we're the way we should be as a male or a female, or all kinds of concerns that are everyday human concerns, but they can run really deep and they can last a lifetime. Lots of times what happens when we are having a really deep positive erotic experience, we get this sense of transforming what has been painful, and the doubts that we've had about ourselves, they evaporate into thin air, and we basically feel a deep sense of self-affirmation. And there's something that is so profoundly healing about that. I think for many of us, those are the most memorable experiences of all.
And you talk about violating prohibitions when you come to the obstacles, which is a big part of your erotic equation. And I thought it was fascinating that, in your research you found that in 39% of your respondees that they did violate prohibitions, but 68% raised as Catholics had that experience.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good example you're bringing up, where, you know, sometimes the difficulty or the pain or the struggle we've had is really creating the space to be our true sexual selves. It seems like the world around us, the grown-ups, the institutions, our beliefs in some cases, don't want us to be sexual. We get the message that it's wrong, it's bad, we're going straight to hell, or whatever it might be. And so for some of us, what is healing in our sexual experiences, if they're good, is that we feel a sense of liberation. We are basically freed of the constraints that have held us back. And we get to be the full person that we are, and we get to express ourselves, including maybe parts of ourselves that we are normally reluctant to let show, like maybe something a little wild or a little nasty might come out.
Yeah, you talk about the naughtiness factor.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that naughtiness factor?
Well, that's the joy that we get from violating the rules.
Right.
And that's the feeling, you know, it's we were talking about how the rules, sexual rules or anti-sexual rules, have a kind of a paradoxical effect a couple weeks ago. On the one hand, those rules can be very inhibiting and they can get us all uptight and shut down. But on the other hand, some of us are lucky enough to discover that by breaking the rules, we actually can become extra energized, and it brings a feeling of autonomy and liberation being true to ourselves. And it's like a way of saying, you know, to hell with your rules and regulations. I'm a free, autonomous being, and I get to do what I want. And sometimes when we have that feeling like we're breaking all the rules, is special moments of liberation, especially for people who have been inhibited by the very same rules in their lives.
And I've heard you say that we learn as kids that when we feel sexual, we're not supposed to, so we carry that forward.
Yeah. It's
talking about that. Hey, you can't do that. Hey, what are you doing on the radio? Do your mother know what you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Just like that. And in your book, The Erotic Mind, I think you make some great suggestions under the section Coping with Troublesome Turn-Ons, where you say, if you've been unlucky in a string of relationships, could it be that you are reenacting frustrating or painful relationships from the past? Make a list, and I'm going to bring this into my private practice for certain people, for certain clients. Make a list of each of the people to whom you've been most strongly attracted in your life. What characteristics do they have in common? Can you identify difficulties from your early life that you're still trying to fix or otherwise play out through your current relationships? And Jack, you know from your clients, I know from my clients, that is very common.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the tricky and sometimes very painful aspects of our erotic lives and our attempts to heal ourselves, is sometimes we end up simply repeating the thing that has been painful in our lives without getting any healing out of it. So, for example, there are people, many people, who do have these same doubts that the rest of us have about their desirability, their lovability, but they've got it particularly strong. Their doubts are particularly deep and painful. And what they might do is select over and over again somebody who is either not available or who's a kind of an ambivalent person, who's like hot and cold, you know, there 1 minute and gone the next, or someone they can't quite get. And then they get into a pattern of chasing after people who don't really fully want to be with them. And there's some big excitement in the chase. There's no doubt about it. Mm. But those who keep repeating that pursuit without fulfillment often end up just reaffirming their deepest fear that they're really not that desirable after all. And it can be a very, very painful thing to watch someone repeat that scenario and others that can be equally painful over and over again.
How does, Jack, how does this tie in with Sigmund Freud's idea of repetition compulsion?
I think it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that Freud's idea was that, you know, when we have certain conflicts that we may or may not be conscious of, especially if we're not conscious, that we're more likely to repeat those things and to get into similar situations and repeat them over and over again. It's really the same idea, only I'm talking about how that manifests, especially in erotic life, where we have these erotic repetitions.
Erotic repetitions.
And they can be very, very painful for a person to go through. But the good news is, and this is something that I believe very strongly based on everything that I have observed and seen and heard from the people I get to talk with, and I'm sure you've heard this too, that when a person has a problematic turn-on like that, where they keep repeating an unfulfilling situation, that embedded in the turn-on that they keep repeating, there is an urge to heal. There is a seeking of a resolution. There's a desire to find that transformative experience that we were talking about just a few minutes ago, where self-doubts transform into self-affirmation. That's what they're seeking. And there's an urge built into it to find that. It's just that some people get stuck in the problem that they're dealing with and can't find the transformation to resolve it.
And that's where therapy can really be useful.
It can. Particularly, Diana, I think for a person who has, let's say, the courage and the willingness to explore that it takes to go into this very deep material and to examine painful areas where one may be stuck, the rewards are enormous for a person who's willing to do that, particularly if they're finding that they are repeatedly in unsatisfying or painful erotic experiences over and over again.
Would you, Jack, talk about your case, Diego, because he I think, is a good example of some of this process for a client.
Yeah, he really represents a lot of what we've just been talking about. This was a man that I worked with just a while ago. I worked with him for quite a while. He came in to see me because he had one of these erotic repetitions going on.
Yeah.
In which he was always, he happened to be a gay man, and he was drawn to other men and would fall in love with them as well as have strong erotic desires for them, who not only were unavailable to him, but they also were kind of cold and distant, and he would see them as superior to himself. He would put them up on a pedestal, and how many of us do that?
Mm-hmm.
A certain amount of that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural part of being attracted to someone to think they're fabulous, right? I mean,
and you idealize them to a degree.
And we do idealize, and that's normal human behavior. But in Diego,
probably not. It's probably not the way Steve Martin did it once when he said, I always put women up on pedestals. That way I can look up their dresses.
Well, that'll be part of it.
That could be the other motivation, but probably not what you're discussing.
But in Diego's case, you know, he would put them so far up on the pedestal that he not only could see things, but he could he worshipped them, essentially.
The thought has been planted.
And what we came to discover, and some of this he had already discovered on his own, and then we just took it to a deeper level, is that, you know, when he was a young kid, particularly pre-high school and on into the high school years, he knew he was different in terms of his sexual attractions, and he felt really bad about them. He felt kind of alienated from the other guys, and he had this incredible admiration and envy of the jocks, of the cool people, the with-it people, and he would be intensely attracted to them, but couldn't talk to them. I mean, he felt intimidated by them. And so he carried this pattern into his adult life of being drawn to people who basically intimidated him and who he would worship but also could not have. And so he lived kind of in a perpetual state of longing and desire, but also feeling bad about himself. It
right.
was reaffirmed every time he would find someone else who was better than him. And when he came to see me, actually, he was in the midst of a relationship, a pretty intense relationship with someone like that who he felt was, like, really totally with it, totally cool.
Out of his league.
but this was a very troubled person himself.
Yes.
Who had drug problems and who, you know, couldn't be trusted and just caused no end of misery, but he couldn't let go of this person. So what Diego ended up doing, and this is what happens for any of us who are caught in a situation like that, is if we're as courageous as Diego, he went into a deep self-exploration of what all this meant. And he really tapped into the full depth of his own self-hatred. And in his case, it ran deep. And luckily, for many of us, it doesn't go that deep or it's not that intense. But he was really stuck, he came to realize, in a position of self-hatred. And as he came to realize this, he started to realize that, you know, that doesn't really, maybe that made sense at one time for him to feel that way, but it doesn't make sense now because in actuality, this was an attractive man, a smart man, a lot to offer, great sense of humor, reliable, loyal, successful in many ways, so much to offer, and he began to see his own value gradually. This was a gradual process, and this started to shift the kind of people that he was attracted to. And he actually reached the point where he could, he had this, sometimes I call this a dual reaction. A lot of people have this, where he could spot across a room in a split second the type of person he always used to be attracted to, one of these, you know, supposedly with-it guys that couldn't be trusted. He could spot him across the room, and then at that same moment in time, or a split second later, he would have, like, a revulsion reaction.
Well, I think it's testimonial to what a good therapist you are, because you facilitated that exploration. And, yes, it takes courage to do that. I've seen it in some of my clients. And then, don't you agree, Jack, that part of our job satisfaction is that we do occasionally or maybe even somewhat often get to see absolute transformations in people, and I feel so privileged to witness
privileged.
This sort of thing.
Well, and I feel it throughout the process. It can be very difficult to sit with someone while they're really stuck in a difficult place.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of what we do. But also, though, when somebody starts moving forward. When
yes.
they start a discovery process, even if they have no idea where it's going to take them, there's something so deeply exciting about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can begin to see the person come to life as they look at the most difficult truths in their own experience.
The familiarity with a dysfunctional family of origin, this is a rather scatological metaphor, but it's true that the room may smell like shit, but you're familiar with the smell. And so some people, until they get help, are drawn to what's familiar, even though it's awful.
Yeah, you know, in the idea of seeking transformation in our erotic lives,
mm-hmm.
in order to get transformation, we kind of, to a certain degree, we need to start with the thing we're trying to transform. You know, it's like some people might think, well, then why didn't Diego or others like him who chase after people they can't have,
yeah.
why don't they just stop and pick
mm.
somebody who already loves them?
Mm.
Well, in Diego's case, that wouldn't really do the job because he's trying to fix something from his past.
Yes.
Where he has to, he was trying to find someone who was up on the pedestal that he couldn't have, who would, in actuality, turn out to love him in the end. It just didn't happen to turn out that way, you know, because of he was picking people who were not available for that. And as he realized that he was doing that, and as he realized his own worth, he started picking different people. And finally, I'm happy to say this is one of those really good outcomes.
Yes.
The best that you could hope for is the last contact that I had with Diego, he was happily in a relationship with someone who was crazy about him.
Oh, and, such a happy ending.
But let me tell you this other little piece that goes with the happiness. He continued to find it difficult every day to fully accept that love.
Because he had to stay very conscious.
Uh-huh.
And this was something that had not been integrated into his
right.
his persona as a kid. But to stay conscious and to realize that he had a good man in his life and he was a good man.
Yeah.
And there was a nice exchange.
And then he continued, and many people do this, he continued mm-hmm. to play with the imagery of worshiping someone he couldn't have in his fantasy life
mm.
to add extra charge.
Mm.
But I guess I would say without having to take it to heart,
mm-hmm.
without having to feel bad about it. And people do this, you know, they may
sure they
develop a turn on actually even as a result of a traumatic situation. And then as they work through the trauma, they change their relationship to their turn on, perhaps, but they may keep certain parts of it for their own personal enjoyment without being hurt by it.
So
well,
you
and then
seldom
that...
get a person like that walking in after such discoveries of the black eye. How'd you get the black eye? Well, the sort of person I used to be attracted to no longer attracts her. So I walked up to him and said, hey, you really repulsed me. And he just socked me. I don't know what happened.
mm-hmm.
There's more than one way to get a black eye.
Okay, the next thing we'll work on, Diego, is your restraint of pen and tongue, perhaps. Do they ever get so excited about their new discovery that they go out and just sort of blurt out how they've changed, much to their own detriment?
Well, some people stumble along one way or the other as they discover something new, a new way of being. It doesn't always come out smoothly, and I think that's how it goes for us. We, especially when we're stretching our own envelope, you might say, and moving into unfamiliar territory, we kind of stumble and make some mistakes as we go. That should be expected.
We are coming up to our half-hour break, and there's so much more, of course, to discuss in this area, but we're going to move on to your second book, which is still in print, I think the fourth edition, after the break, and it is Anal Pleasure and Health. And I know that you listeners will want to stay tuned if you're archiving this, you probably will just go continue to do it forward. And, you know, I think that whether you're straight, gay, or somewhere in between, the chances are pretty good that at some point in your life you might have wanted to try anal sex. So we're going to come back and talk about anal sex.
As a matter of fact, if you store the second half of the show, you might even be anal retentive, but that's for another time. However, if you'd like to call us, our studio line toll-free is 1-888-874-4888. And, of course, you're listening to Wiley and Sage Love, Lust, and Laughter with our guest, Jack Morin, whose website is www.jackmorin.com.
Telefono e tre, probabilmente a metro schiavo d'amore. Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?
Come to the Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
A shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Are you one of the millions caught up in that first world rat race? Well, I used to be. I'm John Mueller, host of the Expat Files, where we discuss what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire down in Latin America. Can you really live like a king down here on a crummy Social Security check? What about starting a business, or buying a house, or love and romance? Just tune in Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. and send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And to listen to any of my past shows, just go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com/archives and click on the link to the Expat Files. Nos vemos.
I kiss the smile upon her face.
This is the number one radio station for progressive independent thinkers, the Progressive Radio Network.
And we are back with Wiley and Sage Love, Lust, and Laughter with our guest, Jack Morin. And today we're going to, actually there's a strange sign here in Hawaii coming down Kalani-Anaoli Highway. There is a street in Hawaiian, but they didn't put the Hawaiian diacritical mark over it. And a guy from the mainland, I was giving him a ride back to the ship, he was a gay musician. And he was performing in Honolulu. He looked at the sign and said, oh, my God, they have a street called Anal 2? It was actually Anali'i. But well, I suppose one could interpret the sign just that way by looking at it. But I said, no, actually, it's Anali'i. But he said, stop the car, and he got a picture of it. So along Kalani'i Anaoli Kalanianoli Highway is a chance to mispronounce Hamaliki. But anyway, I digress. And now here's our scintillating hostess of the mostest, Dr. Diana Wiley.
Thank you, Billy. So, you know, anal sex, why would we cover this topic on this show? Because, in fact, it could catch severe grief from the self-righteous and the anally oppressed. But we do need...
I'll retain that.
Oh, okay, Billy. But we do need to have a few suggestions, you know, in case curiosity nips us in the rear. And Jack Marin is the ideal person to talk about this. And, in fact, Susie Bright, who's well-known among many of us in the field, she calls Jack Moran's anal pleasure and health the Bible of anal sanity. That's a really nice compliment, Jack.
Yeah, that really means a lot to me.
Yes.
As opposed to be called a crazy a-hole for
months. Yeah, exactly right.
That too.
So much better.
So, you know, a lot of people are curious, and a lot of people already know that anal sex can be enjoyable, intimate, and adventurous. But we need some guidance, and I think that you'll want to give us that and talk about what are some things that people really need to know about anal sex if they're just curious, or if they're doing it and they're trying it and experiencing pain. What can you tell us, Dr. Jack?
Yeah. Well, I think a good place to begin, Diana, is to say just a little bit about what anal sex is, because what many people think is that anal sex is anal intercourse. And in reality, of course, that's one possibility among many others. And I think it's important to be aware of a whole range of things, because there's many people who would be curious and might like to try or do really enjoy having some external anal stimulation during sexual play that might occur with a finger, a lubricated figure or not lubricated, or there are some people, I don't know if we'll have time to get into this, who do enjoy oral anal contact, which for some people would be a disgusting idea, but for others it can be extremely pleasurable thing to do, especially when the area is nice and clean.
Somebody's the favorite aphorism is cleanliness is next to friendliness.
Yes, that can be true.
And isn't that, Jack, also it's called rimming, a slang word for...
It's known as rimming popularly, yes.
Yeah, a slang word for kissing ass, literally.
Yeah, and then, you know, there are other people who are curious or who enjoy anal insertion, but maybe gently with a finger or two.
Yes.
And they like anal massage that goes internal a little bit. Some people enjoy it when their partner or themselves uses an object such as a butt plug, which is it's a sexual toy specifically designed for anal insertion. It's kind of cone, a little bit cone-shaped with a base on it. Made of a flexible material.
And tell why the base is so important, Jack.
Well, the base keeps it from, while you're inserting it, getting carried away and pushing the object all the way in.
It's time to play emergency room, colon for colons. There's
well, you know, but if, you know, I always like to say when that subject arises, which it seems to come up, that, you know, there are cases where somebody will be inserting some object anally, and it will, quote, get lost. You know, they'll kind of lose a grip on it, and it'll be in the rectum. You know, this does not necessarily involve at all an emergency room visit, unless it's like a sharp object they happen to do this with or something like that. But normally all it takes is just a little relaxation, just relax and don't panic, and it will come out all by itself. But it's better to avoid that situation to begin with, so if you're going to use an object, pick an object that has a base on it that prevents it from going all the way in, and that's one of the good things about a butt plug. And some people really like to have that lubricated and, again, inserted, and they may like to have it move around in different ways, in and out perhaps, maybe more in a circular motion, or maybe just have it in without it moving, because they like this feeling of fullness that comes with that. And so that's another form of anal sexual play.
And may I just interject that I think that for couples that have heterosexual couples that use this anal play as part of their sexual play is to have an anal toy and a vaginal toy and keep them
mm-hmm.
separate.
Keep them separate because there's sort of different organisms that naturally live in the rectum and live in the vagina. And you don't want to mess up the natural balance of things there.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to mix the two areas. So if you have a toy for anal stimulation and you want another toy for vaginal stimulation, that's great. Just keep them separate. Or you could put a condom on the toy and then put another condom on if you want to move it to the other orifice. And, that way you don't need
that's efficient.
That's more efficient. Probably having two is more efficient. But anyway, and then, of course, we get to anal intercourse, which involves the insertion of a penis into the anal opening and into the rectum.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many men, for example, who enjoy all of these forms, any and all of these forms of anal stimulation from their women partners. They like to be touched. They like rimming, perhaps. They like
mm-hmm.
to have a finger inserted, perhaps during while oral sex is going on. They sometimes like to have an object or a butt plug type of thing inserted by their partner. And in some cases, some guys like it if they're female partner were to put on a strap-on dildo type of thing where it's just there's body straps that hold a dildo in place so that it becomes possible then for a female partner to actually be the insertive partner in intercourse with her male or female partner. And there are people who like that.
That's the expression, bend over, boyfriend.
Yes. Yes,
and as I understand it,
in a Groucho who once said, "Bend over, and I'll drive you to Cleveland." Oops, I dropped the soap.
But I think that for a heterosexual man or a homosexual man, but I'm thinking the strap-on for a heterosexual woman, it it can be the naughtiness factor.
Yes,
for sure, but I think most people say that the reason they like doing anal sex has more to do with how it feels than just with the perverse thrill of it all.
Yeah, I think there's many dimensions to it. There's the
mm-hmm.
meaning of it. There's the taboo. Breaking and violating that can be exciting for people. Also, I think for some people who associate various anal activities with different sex roles, which is not necessarily have to be associated. For example, there's a lot of men who write to me saying, you know, thanks for the book because I've always really enjoyed anal stimulation, but when I bring it up, my girlfriend accuses me of being gay, and I'm not gay. You know, it's like I like this stimulation because it feels good, and a great many women like receiving anal stimulation as well, and because basically, there's so many different areas that get stimulated with these forms of anal stimulation, just in terms of the physical pleasure of it. The external anus, right around the anal opening, it is just filled with nerve endings. It's a highly sensitive area, and that's why some people just like to stay external and enjoy being touched around that area. And then if you move into inserting a finger or something else, there's a short, like maybe an inch-long anal canal that then opens into the larger rectum, and there's other nerve endings there that respond very nicely to pressure, sensations of pressure or fullness. And for men, just a few inches in on the front side of the rectal wall is the prostate, which can be massaged through the rectal wall with a finger or a butt plug or a penis. And for many men, that is very pleasurable and can lead to a particular kind of orgasmic intensity for some. And then for both men and women, the muscles that are involved in the anal area are all interconnected with the muscles that are involved with our genitals and throughout our whole pelvic region. And so it's really not possible even to completely separate out the anus and rectum. They're not separate. They're actually integrated with everything else in our pelvis, including our genitals.
You spoke, Jack, a few minutes ago about the woman and her pleasure and the anus being filled with lots of nerve receptors. And it seems that the wall between the vagina and the rectum probably swells, as I understand it,
yeah,
when the woman is sexually aroused. And so this wall might tug on some of the same nerve that transmits vaginal orgasms to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So the orgasm can be intensified, and it's providing extra stimulation to the pelvic nerve. So it could even be called a blended orgasm.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, those who have taken a look or have a clear picture in their mind of how the clitoris is formed inside a woman,
yes,
where the clitoral body is actually quite large internally and kind of wraps around each side of the vagina.
Yes.
And so some of the erectile tissue that makes up the whole clitoral body, some of it is there exactly where you say, between the vagina and the rectum. And also in both men and women, there's a lot of very sensitive tissue between the genitals and the anus, that area we call the perineum.
Perineum.
That gets stimulated, and anyone who's, had some really good touch of whatever type in that area knows something, at least, about the pleasure potential of the perineum. And that's
very helpful in letting you know literally whether you're coming or going.
Yeah.
Yes. And
how helpful.
The anal...
The time, Supreme Being, if you believe in such a thing.
Yes. And this sort of anal stimulation, in fact, as I understand it, lights up extra nerve pathways that help amplify genital orgasms in the man and in the woman. It can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that I encourage people to notice, whether they're interested in anal play directly or not, I think it's kind of interesting to just become aware that when you have an orgasm and you start having those rhythmic contractions, the spasms of orgasm, which is the release of that great erotic charge that has built up, that your anal muscles are completely involved in the rhythmic contractions of the orgasm. So every orgasm to some degree is also an anal orgasm, although some people are not aware that their anus is contracting while they're having an orgasm. But for some people, once they find that out and they become aware of it and more attuned to it, it's a dimension of the pleasure.
And that's why I think many women can be really stimulated when the lover puts a well-lubricated finger into her anus while he's either performing oral sex mm-hmm. on her clitoris or having intercourse with her in her vagina.
Mm-hmm.
It just amplifies everything.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the interesting kind of little factoids that we seem to know is that there are more women than men who report that they have orgasmic experiences from only receiving anal stimulation.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and for many of the reasons that we've just been talking about,
yeah.
That is true. And also, I think that, part of the reason for that is that guys get really focused on their penises
mm-hmm.
when, you know, as the orgasmic producing organ, you know. But some guys find other possibilities and do have orgasmic experiences from anal stimulation as well, or a combination of anal and genital stimulation. But I think women are a little more, have a little more fluidity and flexibility, some women anyway, in terms of the variety of things that they might respond to.
Could you please, Jack, talk about, because so many women, the more evolved women will say, oh, this is just great, but then there are lots of women who say, this hurts. So I know that you write about, you talk about, in order to have comfortable anal sex, the second set of sphincters must be taught how to relax when you ask. So can you talk about the first and second sphincters?
There's two anal sphincters. The sphincter is a ring-like muscle, and most of us know about the anal sphincter, the external one, which is right around the anal opening, right near the surface. If we were to put our finger there and then deliberately contract or tense up that external sphincter, we could feel it very clearly, and then if we kind of release it, we could feel that. And if we gently were to massage around the external sphincter, we could feel it. It's a ring, a muscular ring. What most people aren't aware of, it seems, is that basically just a little bit further in, almost right next to the external sphincter, but a little bit further in, is another ring, a muscular ring. Another sphincter feels exactly the same way. But the interesting thing about the internal sphincter, as it's called, is that whereas the external sphincter is controlled by our central nervous system, where we have voluntary control, and just by paying attention, we can relax the external sphincter or tense it up at will.
So we don't embarrass ourselves.
Right, because we need voluntary control.
Right.
I repeat, are you coming or going?
The internal sphincter, though, is controlled by the autonomic nervous system. That's the whole dimension of our nervous system that controls all these so-called involuntary functions. It's monitoring our heart rate and where blood is going and stuff like that inside of our bodies. And so a lot of the things that the autonomic nervous system does, we are not aware of at all. It just does it automatically, which is hence the name. But the internal sphincter is controlled by the autonomic nervous system. So in order to be able to relax that sphincter, it takes more than just a readiness or a desire to relax it. We have to learn how. And the best way to learn how is to become very familiar with it. And frankly, the best way to do that is develop a wonderful health habit for yourself of every day when you are in the shower or the bath to get into the habit of gently inserting your own finger into your anus and gently massaging around, feeling the external sphincter, feeling the internal one, getting familiar with the difference between the two. With your finger in there, take a couple of deep breaths. Nice, deep, slow ones.
The breaths are important, aren't they, Jeff?
They are, because then as you release on the exhale, notice what happens to your internal sphincter. It's going to let go a little bit, even a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice that, and your finger becomes like a biofeedback device.
Oh, that's well expressed.
Yeah, that's how it works. And basically, with a little practice over time, paying attention, exploring with your breath, you will learn how to relax both sphincters, the external one, which is relatively easy, and the internal one, which takes more awareness in order to do it. And in most cases, when people find anal insertion of whatever kind to be painful or significantly uncomfortable, it's because they are not sufficiently relaxed. And so what I recommend to a lot of people is they do this self-exploration we were just talking about with their own finger. But then if they want to, with a partner, and the partner is available for this, to do anal external massage. And you can do it with each other or just one way, whatever feels right. And to do anal touch, sometimes quite a bit of it, before even contemplating getting into anal intercourse. Because if you try anal intercourse prematurely before you're sufficiently relaxed, you're probably going to have an uncomfortable experience, which is going to make you less likely to want to do it again. And so you want to avoid having your first experience be a negative one, if you can.
So there has to be lots of arousal, And probably for the woman, that's at least 30 minutes. And maybe sitting in a hot tub first would be good.
Warm water helps the relaxation.
Yeah.
Definitely, that's true. And the other thing that's really important for people to become aware of is, you know, some of us, that internal sphincter we've been talking about,
yes,
is attention zone.
Yes, I did want you to talk about that. Because
yeah,
we do, we store so much stress in our butts and that second sphincter.
Yeah,
too.
You know, just like some of us, our tension zone is our neck or our shoulders or
mm-hmm.
our lower back or, you know, our stomachs get all tied up in a knot. Well, one of the most common of all tension zones is the anus.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we feel any kind of a threat, including psychological threats,
mm-hmm.
Or just the stresses of living, that internal sphincter tends to contract in response to the stress or the fear. And so many of us store up the stresses of our lives in our internal sphincter, and we don't even know. And it's important to know that we're doing that, number one, so we can learn to release it, but number two, then we can realize that we're going to need some extra time and attention to learn how to relax, because we have some more extra letting go to do.
And it seems to me this could be very healing, in addition to making sex extraordinary for people that want to explore it.
Yeah.
But I've worked with lots of women and a few men who've had sexual trauma in their past.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if sodomy was involved, there's so much stress and tension in that area of the body.
Yeah, and the trauma doesn't have to be, you know, a big anal rape scene. It could be someone, you were with a partner and they wanted to try anal sex, or they didn't even ask you, they just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were forceful about it and it hurt and you didn't say no.
Exactly. Exactly.
And are going to notice if that something like that happened to you, that quite naturally your anal muscles are going to tense up when you're in a situation like that again. You have to gently train them to feel safe and comfortable and relaxed.
And unfortunately, and Michael Castleman, who was my guest last week and will be again on June 10th. He talks about how many men get their cues, get their education from pornography.
Yeah.
And even, you were on the Howard Stern show when there was this, somebody named Darling, last name, did all these porn, anal porn scenes.
Yes.
And so, but she just, the film would just show her getting right into it without the warm-up.
Exactly.
This is not good education.
No, it's not. And he even asked her about that, because I was kind of on the show with her in a way, and talking about the things we're talking about. And he said, well, I don't remember her first name, but he said, yes, what about you, darling, the anal porn goddess? Do you do any of this warming up and relaxing and massaging and self-exploration that Jack is talking about? And she said, absolutely. And her husband was on the show with her, and he said, I can tell you she does. We do.
Yes. Yes.
Every time.
Does that, we have just a couple of minutes, but in your table of contents, and I really need to get your book, I don't have it, on anal pleasure and health, but you have under integrating and sustaining your discoveries, aging and anal pleasure. What do you say about that just before we have to close the show?
Yeah, well, you know, we are more prone to having anal medical problems as we get older.
Yeah.
And it's kind of partly just the wear and tear over the years.
Right.
And we can, to a significant degree, actually limit that damage that might show up later by taking good care, you might say, of our anuses now.
Gee, that's good. So it's preventive. Preventive pleasure.
Exactly.
Hey,
you know,
Jack, we're out of time. You have promised me that you would come back perhaps in a couple of months, maybe three.
Yeah,
and
glad to.
Look forward to that, and thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Jack, you have so much good information.
Well, thanks, Diana. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you. And Billy, why don't you take us out and remind the listeners of Jack's website.
I'll remind you that jackmoran.com on the web. It's a wonderful site. And, of course, you are listening to Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter right here on PRN Progressive Radio Network. So next week, we'll see you. Until then, as we say in Hawaii, o'o nepu nepu, which is Dr. Lanao, means stay juicy. Till then, aloha.